Okay, so you're a law student, right? And you're buried in your torts casebooks, or maybe it's con law this week. And then, bam, you hit this case ex parte querend.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Nazi saboteurs, they land on American soil. It's World War II. We've got like this secret military trial going on, and the Supreme Court has to like step in and decide, can the president even do this? What about presidential power during wartime? I mean, it's a lot.
It's a huge case,
Yeah.
throws a lot of really big questions at you. So, like, right away, you have to think, was this absolutely necessary to protect the country, or did it totally go against basic civil liberties? And, that's what makes this case so fascinating.
I mean, it's not just some like dusty old case, right? This stuff comes up all the time.
Exactly. I mean, the rules they made in Carrera and those legal principles, they didn't just go away. They've been shaping legal arguments ever since you see it in Guantanamo Bay cases, and basically the whole legal framework of the war on terror.
So that's kind of our mission today, right? To like break down those core legal principles from ex parte querend and see how they still matter today, especially for all the future lawyers out there listening.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's like set the scene. It's June 1942. Two German U-boats, they're sneaking up to the American coast.
Oh, wow.
One's by New York, the other's down by Florida, and eight German guys, they come ashore. But here's the thing, some of them used to live in the US.
Really?
I know, it's crazy, right? Their mission was sabotage straight from Germany. They called it Operation Pastorius.
So what were they going after?
Okay, so it wasn't just random attacks. They had specific targets, American war industries,
Oh, yeah.
the factories making all the stuff for the war effort and important infrastructure like railroads, anything to mess up America's ability to fight the war.
It's like they wanted to cripple the U.S. from the inside.
And it's like something out of a movie. These guys, when they landed, they were actually wearing German Marine infantry uniforms, like full-on military gear. But then they ditch the uniforms, they even bury them and change into regular civilian clothes, like they were trying to just blend in and disappear.
So they could carry out their mission.
Exactly. But then something wild happens. One of the saboteurs, this guy George Dash, he has like a total change of heart.
Oh, we flip.
He basically walks into the FBI and spills everything, the whole plot, and that's how they catch all eight of them in New York and Chicago. I mean, can
Yeah.
you imagine being that guy, Dash, the conflict he must have felt betraying his mission like that?
Yeah, I mean, he single-handedly changed everything. His decision set off this massive legal battle that we're talking about.
So now President Roosevelt, he hears about all this and it's wartime, so he's going to act fast. He says these guys, they can't be tried in regular courts. They're going to a military tribunal under the Articles of War, and this is where things get really interesting, constitutionally speaking.
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, facing this military tribunal, the saboteurs, they're saying, hold on, this isn't right. You're violating our rights. They're pointing to the Fifth Amendment right to due process and the Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial, like the core stuff.
Yeah, so their first move is classic. They file habeas corpus petitions.
Of course, basically saying, hey, you can't just hold us without a good reason, especially outside the normal court system.
Right, and the district court, they weren't buying it. They denied the petition. So guess who steps in the Supreme Court?
They appealed.
Exactly. And get this, they granted certiorari before the Court of Appeals even had a chance to rule. I mean, that shows you how important this case was nationally. They had to figure this out fast, especially since the military trial was already happening.
Wow, so everything's on hold waiting for the Supreme Court.
Right. And now the court's got these two massive questions in front of them. First, did the president even have the power to create this military tribunal in the middle of a war?
Right, does he have that authority?
And second, this is the big one, were these saboteurs entitled to a trial in a regular civilian court with all the constitutional protections like a jury trial? I mean, that's like the cornerstone of our justice system.
It is.
So everyone's waiting, and the court comes back with a unanimous decision.
They all agree?
They say, yes, the military tribunal can go on. The president did have the power to do this. And no, the saboteurs don't get a civilian trial. They're considered unlawful combatants under the law of war.
Unlawful combatants, that's key.
So let's break down how they got there. Chief Justice Stone, he wrote the opinion and he leaned hard on the Articles of War. So what was he looking at there?
So the court, they were basically interpreting laws that Congress had already passed. Stone pointed to these specific parts of the Articles of War, Articles 1581 and 82. And these articles, they said you can use military commissions to try offenses against the law of war. And they said unlawful combatants. Those are the guys you can try this way. So the court's saying, hey, this isn't just the president going rogue. Congress already made a law for this type of situation.
So it wasn't just raw executive power. They were trying to ground it in existing law.
Right.
Okay, so now we got to talk about this distinction between lawful and unlawful combatants. That seems like it was really important for the court.
It's crucial. It gets to the heart of how wars are supposed to be fought.
Yeah.
See, the law of war, it's not just some casual thing. It's a set of international rules and longstanding traditions that say how countries and their armies have to act during a war. And those rules, they say there's a difference between fighters who follow the rules, lawful combatants, and those who don't.
So lawful combatants, those are like the soldiers in uniform.
Exactly. They're part of a regular army. They wear uniforms. They carry their weapons openly, and they follow the rules of war. And if they get captured, they have to be treated as prisoners of war, POWs, and they have certain rights under international law.
So where did these saboteurs fit in?
Well, they were definitely not following the rules. They hid their uniforms. They were operating in secret among civilians. They were planning to attack key infrastructure things that civilians depend on. Factories, railroads. It was all sneaky and underhanded. They wanted to blend in and strike from the shadows.
So that's what made them unlawful.
Exactly. The court said they were unlawful enemy belligerents, which basically means they were fighting dirty. They broke the rules that separate legitimate warfare from sabotage and espionage against civilians.
This reminds me of another big case, Ex Parte Milligan. They said you can't have military trials for civilians if the regular courts are working. How did the court in Crearan deal with that?
Good point. That's a bit of a head scratcher. But the court, they said, look, Milligan, that was different. Remember in Milligan, you had a civilian who got arrested and put on trial by the military in Indiana, nowhere near any fighting. And the civilian courts in Indiana were working just fine. So the Supreme Court in Milligan, they said, that's not okay. You can't use military courts when you have perfectly good civilian courts available. It's like Milligan was about limiting military power when things are relatively peaceful.
So Crearan was different because of who these guys were.
Exactly. The court was super clear about that. They said the Crearan guys weren't just regular civilians like Milligan. They were enemy belligerents. They came to the U.S. during war with a hostile mission, and they broke the laws of war by being all sneaky and stuff. The court even pointed out that if an American citizen joins forces with the enemy and comes here to do bad stuff, they're considered an enemy belligerent, too. It's not just about citizenship.
So since there are unlawful combatants breaking the rules of war, they didn't get the same constitutional rights as someone accused of a regular crime.
That's the gist of it.
Yeah.
The court basically said, look, the Fifth Amendment right to a grand jury indictment and the Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial, those don't automatically apply to offenses against the law of war that are tried by military commissions because they're not regular crimes, they're acts of war. And the president, as commander-in-chief, he's got the power, and Congress backed him up on this to deal with wartime threats like this. Chief Justice Stone even wrote that the Fifth and Sixth Amendments, they weren't meant to tie the president's hands when it comes to trying war criminals in military courts.
So what happened to the saboteurs after the Supreme Court decision?
Well, things moved quickly. Six of them were executed just days after the ruling. The other two, they helped the authorities, so they got prison sentences, and they were eventually deported back to Germany after the war. It's a stark reminder of how serious this stuff was. We're talking life and death here.
Absolutely. And like we said, this case, it didn't fade away. It's had a big impact. How has Ex Parte Crearan shaped legal thinking since World War II?
Its influence has been huge, especially when it comes to war and national security. Ex Parte Crearan became the go-to case for setting up military tribunals in later conflicts, especially after 9/11 and the War on Terror. It provided the legal basis for detaining and trying suspected terrorists as unlawful combatants, even if they weren't caught on a traditional battlefield. And that's still a really controversial issue today.
And you mentioned it's been controversial. What are some of the criticisms of the Crearan decision?
Well, a lot of people are concerned that it weakens due process rights and gives the president too much power during emergencies. The court did say national security is super important, but the way they rushed the trial and kept things so secret, it makes people question if it was really fair and transparent. But you also got to acknowledge the other side for it. The court was saying that people who break the rules of war, who act as unlawful combatants, they can be subject to military justice, even if they're American citizens. It all boils down to this constant struggle between keeping the country safe and protecting individual rights, especially during times of war.
So as we wrap up, what are the big takeaways for law students listening? What should they remember about Ex Parte Crearan?
I'd say there are three key things.
Mm-hmm.
First, Ex Parte Crearan, it firmly established that military tribunals are a legitimate way to try people who commit war crimes, especially during an actual war. Second, the difference between lawful and unlawful combatants is super important. Unlawful combatants, because they break the rules of war. They don't automatically have the same rights to a civilian jury trial as lawful combatants or regular civilians. And third, you can't really understand Ex Parte Crearan without also looking at Ex Parte Milligan. These two cases together, they draw a line between how we treat enemy agents who threaten the country and the rights that regular civilians have, even during wartime.
It makes you wonder, though, right? War is changing. We've got all these non-state actors, terrorist groups and stuff. And with technology the way it is, who knows what kind of crazy sabotage could happen? It's not just about guys in uniforms anymore. So how do these principles from Ex parte Corinn, how do they apply to these new kinds of threats that we might face in the future? I mean, in this case, it's 80 years old, but it still raises these really fundamental questions about how much power the government should have and how we protect individual rights when things get really bad. It's definitely something to think about as you move forward in your legal careers.
No question. It's a case that keeps on giving.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Ex parte Corinn. Catch you next time.
See ya.